Welcome to Season 5 of the Fight Science Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan Sullivan. In this series, we are further expanding our knowledge by speaking to experts in the fields of physiology, psychology, nutrition, strength and conditioning, and mindset training. We'll be speaking to the coaches and practitioners who do this every day and to the researchers and academics who are at the forefront of the latest science. Today, our guest is Alexa Eisenberg. Alexa is a registered dietitian who holds a Bachelor of Science in Nutrition Sciences and Dietetics and a Master's of Science in Dietetics. She is the former Performance Nutrition Coordinator at the UFC Performance Institute, Las Vegas, and recently started her own private practice, Alexa Eisenberg Nutrition. Alexa has a plethora of knowledge that is applicable for not only athletes, but the general population as well. I've asked her to come on today so we can clear the air on some common nutrition misconceptions. There's a lot of myths to bust, so let's get to it.
Green light means we are live. I had to double check that green light to make sure we're actually on. But we are live back for another episode of the Fight Science Podcast. Now, joining me today is Alexa Eisenberg. She is a registered dietitian. And as I went through in the introduction, formerly working at the UFC Performance Institute is where I first met Alexa. She has just gone out on her own in a private practice dietitian role. So very, very, very excited for her to be on today. Alexa, thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah. What I wanted to get you on is to kind of bust on a few of these nutrition myths. You would certainly see it. I certainly see it. Even when you're working with elite level athletes, these myths kind of come into play. But I'm sure you working now in a private practice with a whole new set of clients, you must see this all the time.
Oh, yeah. I see everything. Everything that I could imagine. So there are quite a bit of false information out there. So I'd be happy to set the bar straight and go from there.
Yeah, absolutely. Just ask Alexa. Is that the tagline that you go with, Alexa?
Yeah. So I'm using Amazon Alexa to my advantage because it's ruined my name that I'm like, you know what? I'm going with it. So that is my kind of trademark. And then, but my company is called Alexa Eisenberg Nutrition, but, I do have Just Ask Alexa as my slogan.
Yeah. And it's super cool. Like it's even things that I feel like I've taken for granted because of the population I work with athletes where a lot of these things we don't so much have to deal with. And I kind of forget like, hey, yeah, that is something that people believe so much. And I guess for like you and me, we've done this for years. We studied for years. We've worked for years. And it's like in our brains, it's like, oh yeah, it's obvious that you don't do X or you don't do Y. But for most people, for I'd say 99% of people who don't have that knowledge or experience, this is really confusing stuff. And it is. It's really tough. And nutrition is such a polarizing and confusing science. One day it says this and the next day it says this and carbs are good, carbs are bad. It's like, do I eat carbs? Yep. Do I not? And it's super tough. How have you found navigating that with your clients?
I see a variety of different clients. So I see anyone who is struggling with gut health to collegiate athletes who have disordered eating to weight loss clients who are eating fast food every day and just looking to be healthier. So I see a variety of different people. And really what I try to do is just set a foundation. I mean, it really goes back to, especially, you know, most of my clients are weight loss clients and it is about calories. We talk about calorie awareness, macronutrient awareness, no good foods, no bad foods, just the foundation piece. And I think for a lot of people, you just have to bring it back to the basics to make sure that they understand really what nutrition is about and kind of get that diet culture mentality out of their mind because there's so many different diets out there.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, let's start this episode because all I want to do this episode is I just want to ask Alexa to bust these common nutrition myths. And I'll put this out to social media for my followers to send through some questions. And we got quite a few responses we went through. We won't be able to get through all of them, but I picked out 10 that'll be pretty interesting. And obviously these are things that are pretty common. So let's just get stuck right into it. Let's go in. And I think the first one is probably one that gets thrown around a lot. And I noticed you have done a post about this quite recently. And it's the difference between a nutritionist and a dietitian.
Yeah. Yeah. So a lot of people don't know this if they're not in the nutrition field. So at least for me, at least in the US, as a dietitian, you have to have an undergraduate degree in nutrition. You also have to have a master's degree by 2024 So by 2024, everybody has to have a master's degree. However, if you did get a degree before then, you're kind of grandfathered in. But because of the competition, it is, you know, it is really beneficial to have a master's. In addition, you have to do a 9 to 12 month internship. So that includes a variety of different experiences and practice areas. So anywhere from food service to community nutrition to medical nutrition therapy. And then after you complete your internship, you take a board certified exam to become a registered dietitian. So that is how you become a dietitian. For a nutritionist, really the only thing you have to do is know one thing on nutrition. You can call yourself a nutritionist. If you read a book on nutrition, if you took a 3 week, 4 week, 6 week, 6 month course on nutrition, you can call yourself a nutritionist. So every dietitian is a nutritionist, but not every nutritionist is a dietitian. So it's important to understand the difference between the two, especially if you're looking to get into, you know, work with somebody to achieve your health goals, because unfortunately there are a lot of people out there who are not qualified to provide nutrition advice. I think just because it worked for somebody doesn't mean that you have the right to coach somebody else. And I'm seeing that a lot, especially as I'm growing my private practice. So that is one thing to keep in mind if you are looking to, you know, hire somebody for your nutrition goals.
Yeah, I call it the N equals one philosophy, where it's like, okay, this worked for me, so it must work for every single other human being. And you know what, to be fair, it probably does work. If you did something, it'll probably work for a couple people. And I think that's something that's just drilled into you when you go through university, or if you're in that clinical space, it's like, you're looking for the vulnerable few, right? Like, and it's going, maybe whatever you did is fine for three or four of your mates, but maybe the fifth one has digestive issues or has background heart problems or something. And then all of a sudden, what you've just told them to do has ended them up in hospital. And it's like, you're responsible for that. Yeah. You have to be aware of those things. So I'm sure a bunch of this will come up, but let's go through. There's some really cool questions here. Some that are pretty basic and then some that are pretty interesting. So let's just go through them all. I think the first one is, let's start off here nice and soft. Is there such thing as bad foods?
So, I mean, honestly, it depends who you ask, but my philosophy is that there isn't anything such as bad foods. I think all foods can fit. And I think it's super important, especially if you're trying to achieve your weight loss goals, that you don't think in terms of black and white. Not allowing yourself to have certain foods or restrict certain foods can a lot of times lead to these intense cravings, to where people tend to, you know, overeat and overindulge, to where they can't achieve their goals. And it's this restrict binge cycle, to where if if you're craving chocolate, allow yourself a piece of chocolate, move on with your day. Yeah, it's some calories in there, but it's not going to completely ruin your progress. And I always tell my clients, the only way you are going to ruin your progress is if you give up. If you stop, if you quit, that's when you're a failure. But if you, you know, eat something considered quote unquote bad, it might have more calories than a piece of fruit, right? A piece of chocolate might have more calories than a piece of fruit, but it doesn't mean that it's necessarily a bad food. All foods can really fit into a person's diet.
Yeah, brilliant. So are you programming those type of foods? So say if I come and I say, hey, Alexa, I love chocolate. I absolutely love chocolate. I can't go without it, but I want to lose weight. Are you programming that into my plan?
Yep. So I always talk to my client about their non-negotiables. So what are your non-negotiables? What don't you want to give up? What do you want to live with and still achieve your goals? So most of it is like wine. A lot of like female athletes like love their Pinot Grigio, right? So, okay, you want wine. We'll put that into your plan so you can have a glass of wine or two glasses, you know, occasionally here and there. Because if you restrict that, then that's when the cravings get bigger, and then that's when that can lead to overeating or overdrinking or just overall overindulging.
Yeah, absolutely. What a great answer. And this is this next question, I'm sure you're going to lean on your experience working with some of the most elite level athletes in the world. But this is even me. This is a question I still get today. Are carbs bad for you?
Yeah. So I don't know why there's such a phobia with carbohydrates. I worked obviously with the UFC. So there were times when I worked with those athletes, especially over fight week, and they had to make weight acute short term, where carbohydrate, getting rid of carbohydrates in the diet is beneficial. You know, one is to pull water out of the body, right? So, but the fact is that it's acute, it's short term. Immediately after they weigh in, we refuel them with carbohydrates. After they fight, we essentially put them on a metabolic rehabilitation plan to where they're eating carbs almost at every meal, if not every meal. And I think, especially if you are an avid exerciser, carbohydrates are key and absolutely imperative to your training, your gains in the gym, whatever your goals are. Even losing weight, you can still eat carbohydrates and lose weight. I think people are so hung up on low carb as opposed to just, hey, let's focus on like an overall calorie deficit. Like, you can still have balanced meals, but let's work on calories over pulling back on carbohydrates so much. And I think people are so gung-ho about it. And it's kind of unfortunate because it's carbs are getting such a bad rap these days.
Yeah. And let's just expand on that a little bit, because I'm sure you've seen this a lot, because if a client or a person or an athlete or whoever do come to you and they say, hey, Alexa, I've cut carbohydrates out of my diet, and in the last 3 days, I've lost a heap of weight. Mm-hmm. That's super common. Can you explain why that is, and why it's not necessarily because you cut carbohydrate? It is, but it isn't type thing.
Yeah. I mean, you see all those posts on social media, like, yeah, I went, you know, keto for a week, which isn't really possible. It takes a while to get in ketosis, which is a whole nother topic. But the reason is because when you eat carbohydrates, you are storing your carbs in your body in the form of glycogen. And to store glycogen, you need a lot of water to store your glycogen. When your glycogen depleted, meaning your carbohydrate depleted, you lose a lot of water. And guess where that weight is coming from? It's coming from the water. It is, you know, nearly impossible, if not impossible, to lose in a crazy amount of weight in 1 week and have it all be fat. I think people are just see the number move on the scale and get, you know, really excited, like, oh my gosh, this is working. But it's like, is it coming from the right area? Let's hope it's coming from the fat and not the muscle, or it's just water weight. So I think that's something that is troublesome with low carb diets, because you get such a immediate gratification from it. But in the long term, I think it's super hard to sustain. And that's one thing I always talk to my clients about. One, is it achievable? Is it something you can do the rest of your life? And two, is it going to help you reach your goals long term?
So just reiterating that point, you spoke about if you do want to lose weight, calories are the most important thing, not necessarily how many carbohydrates are you having. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. That is my philosophy, and that's what I believe in. Yes. I think the number one thing is a calorie deficit.
Yeah, absolutely. You spoke about it just then, the number on the scale, and this is something you see all the time. People get really fixated on stepping on the scale and then seeing that little number pop up. But you and I both know that there are 100 different reasons why that number on the scale can change. Can you talk us through what are some of those reasons that doesn't necessarily reflect, like, okay, that doesn't necessarily reflect your true weight?
Yeah. I think people get really obsessed with the scale, especially if they're weighing themselves every day. But there are so many different factors that can come into play. One is maybe you're constipated, maybe you didn't poop that day, or maybe you're a female and it's your menstrual cycle, or maybe you had a lot of salt the night before, or maybe you drink a crap ton of water. There's so many different factors that can come into play. Stress can play a huge role too. So I think the most important thing is to look at weight loss in terms of extended period of time, as opposed to day-to-day fluctuations. Weight loss is not linear. Yeah. I think that's something that people get really hung up on, is if they see the scale go up even, you know, a half a pound, it's like, you know, all hell breaks loose. But in reality, it's going to fluctuate every day. And most of it is water anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. So week to week, and track it over the long term. Mm-hmm. Great advice. All right. Well, let's go into a bit of it. We talked about a bit about carbs, and I see this quite a bit. And well, I used to see this quite a lot. I remember working at a hospital, and an older nurse sat me down when I was having some toast in the morning and gave me a lecture about how bad bread was for me. And I was thinking, okay, like, and to be honest, it kind of made me feel bad. And I was like training twice a day and I was doing my degree at the time. And I thought, wait, do they know something I don't know? But what is it? What is it about bread? Why does bread get such a bad rap, or does it deserve a bad rap?
I think it is still that whole carbohydrate phobic mentality. It seems as though like starchy carbs, like potato, gets a better rap because technically it's a vegetable, starchy vegetable. But I think bread is actually an amazing food. And the reason is because it is very efficient to take with. Like, you can just carry it, you can make a sandwich and you have a meal, as opposed to like, oh, I have to cook my rice and my protein and my veggie. You can just, you know, it's right there in the pantry, bring it out, put some stuff on it and call it a day. So I'm not sure why. I think it's still that carb phobic mentality, but I don't think it should get as bad of rap, because again, my mentality is that all foods fit.
Yeah, absolutely. And I remember the nurse who was telling me this, she also went on a bit of a rant about gluten. That's a big thing as well, right? Do you see that a lot? And well, why is it? Why is gluten getting such a bad rap?
I personally think that gluten is okay to eat, unless obviously you have some type of celiac or some type of gluten intolerance that doesn't sit well in your stomach. But if you don't have any type of GI issues when you eat gluten, it should be a food that, or a component that you should consume in your diet. There's no other reason to cut it out.
How would you know? How would you know if you've got, say, celiac or some type of gluten intolerance? Is there anything like you can do to find that out?
Well, you can always eat it. And then if you have symptoms, any GI symptoms like diarrhea, constipation, or you can get tested for celiac as well.
All right, next. We'll keep this train running, because I think gluten rolls into this one next really, really nicely. Is dairy pro-inflammatory?
So there obviously are a lot of studies out there that say that dairy is pro-inflammatory, but again, I would consider how you feel after you eat dairy. If you're experiencing GI symptoms, then I would cut it out of your diet. But if you aren't, there are actually a lot of great benefits to eating dairy, especially, for example, like chocolate milk post-workout. Milk has a ton of protein in it. A lot of people think that they just go with like these plant-based milks and it's the same, but there is a lot of different nutrients and vitamins between non-dairy milk and dairy milk. So again, if you test for it and you don't have any type of lactose intolerance or anything, I would say dairy is definitely a fine food to eat.
Hey guys, super quick interruption to the podcast to ask a super simple question. Are you sick of supplement companies selling you empty promises and products that are no better than fairy dust? I bet you are. And I'm sick of my clients forking out their hard-earned for it. That's why my colleagues and I created TrainAid, our very own line of a select number of lifestyle and performance supps that we know actually do something meaningful. We have used them with all of our clients, from the stay-at-home mum to our UFC world champions. No gimmicks, no elaborate marketing ploy, just science. To find out more, be sure to follow TrainAid on Instagram and TrainAid Performance on Facebook. All right, back to the podcast. Excellent, excellent. You just said there the plant-based alternatives, and I'm sure if anyone has Netflix at home, you would all be aware of the exactly of the documentary that came out. Was it last year or start of this year or sometime this year maybe?
Yeah, I think it was. Yep. Late last year, early this year.
Late last year, The Game Changers, which was causing nutritionists, dietitians, anyone in the world to be extremely torn and polarized, and it caused a lot of debate. Alexa, in your experience, if we're talking just about athletes, are plant-based diets better for athletes?
We're just talking athletes. I would say that, so my philosophy is I'll always meet the athlete where they are. So if they are vegan or vegetarian for, you know, social reasons or something along those lines, then I'll support them 100%. but I'll also provide context as to why it might be difficult to be a vegan or vegetarian, especially as an athlete. One reason is because it's super, super difficult to get enough protein. You're going to get way more, a more favorable amino acid profile in meats and chicken and animal proteins as opposed to your plant-based proteins. They're going to absorb better in the body. So you do have risk of some deficiencies as well, especially for our female athletes. Iron is a huge component as well, because if you're not eating any red meat or even any animal proteins in general, getting your iron can be very problematic. B12, omega-3s, if you're vegan, calcium, vitamin D. So I think there are a lot of things to consider. And if you are going to go that route, it's super, super important that you plan ahead and know what you're going to be consuming, because you want to be able to hit your protein goals, especially for muscle repair and building purposes.
What would happen, say, if someone does go on that, and it is like vegetarian and veganism is super popular and a lot of athletes do it and there's nothing wrong with it, but what are some of the consequences that they can find if they aren't doing the things that you just said, if they aren't being mindful of the protein, if they're not, you know, making sure they're getting enough iron and B12, what can happen to them?
One is increased risk of injury is one. I would say also just not being able to perform to their highest potential and not being able to repair the muscles and build the muscles depending on their goals and depending on their sport. I would say those are probably the biggest three.
I remember the guys that I was watching this with, I kind of didn't say anything because I'm a business owner and I have to do, as you do as well, a lot of marketing. So I was kind of watching this from that perspective and going like, oh my God, I know the guy that's making this movie just released a vegan protein company. I was like, holy smokes, this guy's going to make so much money. How smart is this? And I wasn't really paying attention to the science and everything that was going on. And I think my scientific brain must have just shut it off. but the guys that I was watching it with, they all said that. They were like, man, these guys are like always just having protein powders and they're just shoving fistful of supplements in their mouth. But that's pretty common, hey, with these athletes.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's super, super difficult to hit your protein goals if you are not eating any animal protein at all. The one thing, too, that I'll just point out in reference to weight class athletes is there are benefits to pulling back on carbohydrates at certain times. Again, like I talked about at the beginning, more acute short-term phases. And a lot of the vegetarian proteins are carbohydrate dense, right? Your beans, your rice, those are more higher carbohydrates. So it's more difficult to in those phases that we want to pull back on the weight, especially like a drastic weight descent.
Yeah. Fight week plans with vegan athletes are always very interesting with the food choices.
Yeah,
you have to go and. This is not a lot.
Yeah. And even, you know, we do try to pull back on sodium over fight week, and some of the Beyond meats or those type of meats are really high in sodium. So that makes it problematic too.
Let's run with this for a little bit longer, because let's shift our paradigm of thinking away from that athletic population. And let's just say for like the everyday person, mm-hmm. Gen Pop people that you might see like in your new practice, what's a plant-based diet mean for them?
So I think it's important to incorporate, you know, all different foods. I think even if you are vegetarian or vegan, I personally think that it is still hard to get your recommended protein, especially if you're like an active, just, you know, general population person. But I mean, there's so many studies saying that it's, you know, red meat causes heart disease. And then there's studies that say you need red meat. So it's so conflicting. But the best advice that I have is to incorporate all foods and have animal protein maybe one day, have, you know, more vegan or vegetarian protein the next, and just kind of switch it off. But don't just because, you know, some studies are saying that it's bad, you know, if you do it in moderation, it's definitely okay.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Let's go on to this next question. This is be an interesting one. So we've got, what is a detox and what does it do? And let's think, the first thing that comes to my mind is like the lemon tea detox. I guess maybe that's just when I was going through school or whenever, that was like the big thing, but I'm sure there's heaps of them out there. Maybe I just block them out, but the lemon tea detox is what comes to front of mind. Like, what is it? And like, does that type of thing do anything?
I'm thinking of like lemon tea or like a juice cleanse or something, you know, along those lines. I personally don't think that they do anything, because our bodies have our liver and our kidneys that do our detox. We don't need to just drink, you know, water with some lemon in it to flush our body out. So I don't agree with detoxes. I don't think they work. I think we have organs that can do that type of work.
I guess a lot of the appeal, I would imagine, with say doing like a lemon detox, is I would assume that you would lose a lot of weight. Like if all you drank for say 5 days was lemon water, you would lose a lot of weight. But is that healthy in your opinion? Is that not?
I think that's kind of similar to where we talked about the like short-term weight loss and that quick gratification with like keto or something. Like low carb, to where you're seeing that weight go down, but like it's not fat. Most of it is probably just water, or it could be muscle too. So you have to really be mindful that something that is a short-term fix is not going to last forever. And eventually you probably won't start seeing those great results that you were seeing in the beginning, or that you thought were great.
Yeah, I could imagine. I've never done a detox to a 5-day extent. I have absolutely no desire to, because I feel like I'd be a horrible human about, you know, 12 hours in or so.
Get hangry.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a good segue actually into this next one. Fasting. Fasting's a super hot topic at the moment. It seems a lot of my athletes, to be fair, ask me about fasting, whether it's good, whether it's not. So let's talk about fasting both for athletes and then for Gen Pop. So let's start with the athletes. Yeah. Is fasting good for an athletic person?
Yeah, so I think, you know, I've read a lot of studies. I don't know if you're familiar with Dr. Rhonda Patrick. And she's really big on like more intermittent fasting, but she talks about like, you know, how you're able to kind of regenerate healthy cells and balance hormones and control blood sugar. But I don't think there's a lot of long-term studies on it. And I think a lot of the studies are done on animals, and we know that animals have a way faster metabolism than humans do. So I think that's something to consider. But the biggest thing in my mind is, especially for athletes, if you have a morning workout and you are not eating before, that's one of the worst things you can do, especially if it's a high intensity workout. You need some type of fuel, especially some type of carbohydrate source, in order to hit those high intensities and get those gains in order to improve your performance. It's kind of like, you know, how you say you put fuel in your tank to drive a car. You need food in your body to be able to perform, especially train at your highest potential. So interestingly, at the UFC, there were a lot of athletes that came in that were doing intermittent fasting. We'd test their metabolism and see where they're at. And then we'd kind of change a couple of things and have them eat actually before their workout. And we saw their metabolism just skyrocket. So it was quite interesting seeing some of those results, especially just, you know, being able to test it and see some really awesome case studies.
Is that when you say that their metabolism improved, Alexa, what do you mean by that? Where was their metabolism at when they were fasting? And then what happened after you guys reintroduced a bit of food around the training?
Yeah, so it was, I would say maybe one athlete in particular was 20% between the time when they were fasting for maybe, they were doing intermittent fasting for maybe 6 weeks, came into the PI, we changed some things up. I think this athlete came back maybe 4 to 6 weeks later, tested it again, and it skyrocketed. So it was pretty incredible to see, actually. But
And what about for the everyday person, the everyday folk like you and me? Is fasting, do those rules change for everyday people, or is it a different set of rules for them?
So I think the reason that intermittent fasting is works, especially for weight loss, is because you're eating in a shorter amount of time, which means you have less time to eat, which means you're eating less calories, right? So that's in theory why it works. But I don't agree with it. I think that to an extent, I don't think eating right before bed is necessarily beneficial to the body. Maybe eating a couple hours before, but going so long without eating, where most of it's like a 16-hour fast and 8-hour eating window, I don't think is necessarily beneficial, especially if you are trying to do this long term. Like, let's say your friends want to go to brunch at 10 a.m. Well, it's not in your eating window, so you can't enjoy time with your friends. Or if you are hangry, if you can't concentrate, if your stomach is growling, if you're experiencing like all these symptoms and you're just waiting for your eating window at noon, it actually can cause a huge spike in your blood sugar if you're completely, you know, just stuffing your face right when your eating window begins. So I think for some people it can work really well, but I think for others it can't.
Yeah, for sure. And that's such a big part of dieting or making any type of lifestyle change, that a lot of people kind of push to the side and they focus just purely on, hey, it's just the food and it's the numbers, but it's not. Like, food is such a social thing. The food you put in your body literally fuels the person that you are. It's such a intimate and personal thing. And there's so many socio-cultural factors that are integrated with that. I guess this leads pretty well into this next question, is how do you make it sustainable? What type of tips are you giving out to your clients where you're saying, hey, yeah, like if you're going out for breakfast and blah, 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 what are you saying to them to make this sustainable over the long term?
My program is kind of a four-step process to where I always have them start tracking their food. I think for me to be able to see their logs, but also for the client to be aware of how many calories they're eating, what their macronutrient profile looks like, what their micronutrient profile looks like. So I always start there. And then I go to the results phase. So the results phase is more, okay, they came to me because they have a problem. They want me to fix their problem. So for example, weight loss. So then the second phase is kind of that weight loss phase. My third phase is the flexibility phase, where we start weaning away from the MyFitnessPal or some other type of app. And we focus on, okay, how do I go out to eat? How do I go on vacation? And that's where some of that intuitive eating comes in too. But I think the most important thing, especially if my client is kind of in their beginning phase of their weight loss journey, is trying to have a balanced plate to where they're having some type of vegetable, some type of protein, and then some type of carbohydrate source to make it balanced, and where they fill up on that and they stop eating before they really kind of, you know, get too full or overindulge, which is honestly the hardest part, especially when you're going out to dinner or out to eat.
This is one that isn't necessarily that came through, but one that pops into my head. And this is something I've spoken to my guys a lot about. I'd love to hear your thoughts, is like, how do you handle that when you go out, or like if you want to go get takeout? Because in reality, like, busy people who work normal lives and do normal people things, we don't have a kitchen right there where we can go in there and cook, or people spend a lot of their time on the road, or they spend a lot of time in hotels traveling, and we have to eat out. Like, that's just the only way we get. Do you have any top tips?
Yeah.
If we were going, okay, if we need to eat out or get takeaway, are there ways we can do this and still fit into our plan?
I would say one of the best things you can do is try to focus on more, less fried foods, more, you know, grilled chicken over fried chicken. Make sure you have a vegetable at every meal. Even if you're getting takeout, even if it's like Chinese, there's still some ways to incorporate vegetables in, right? When you go out to dinner, it's so, the portions are so large. So I always recommend to my clients, if you're getting takeout, like, portion half of it onto a different plate, put the rest in the fridge, eat what you have on your plate. If you're still hungry, you can go back for more. But most of the time, if they have half of their meal, they feel satisfied after. And I think that's one of the biggest things, because if you just sit there, open your takeout box, and you're just going at it, you're most likely going to eat more just because the food's right in front of you.
Yeah, is there, I guess that's a big thing as well, satiation and just eating out of pure habit, right? I think maybe so much not our generation, but definitely our parents' generation. It was always you eat what's on the plate, and that kind of trickled down, right? And I know maybe
clean
that's changing
plate club.
Down, maybe. Yeah, yeah, exactly. And it's like, well, do you have any tips for that? How can you be a bit more mindful, and how can you be a bit more aware when it comes to dinner times or food times or meal times, whatever it is, to be more mindful of how you're feeling and, okay, am I full? Am I hungry?
Yeah. So this is the last phase of my program is intuition. So foundation, results, flexibility, intuition. So intuition is really intuitive eating. And I always try to end my clients on this to where they are honing in on their hunger and fullness cues. And the best way, I don't know if you've read like Evelyn Tribole, Intuitive Eating, but she's kind of the star of intuitive eating, but working on like a hunger and fullness scale to where you sit down for your meal and you're like, okay, I'm a three, like I'm pretty hungry. I'm not like overly hungry, but I'm not hungry. I'm kind of in the middle. And then as you're eating, really like hone in on your senses. How does this taste? How does this smell? How does the mouth feel? All that kind of stuff. And then stop eating once you get to like a seven on the fullness scale. Like I'm satisfied, I'm not full, and I'm not overly stuffed, but I'm not hungry anymore either.
Yeah, perfect. Okay, Alexa, last question before I let you go and get back to your evening. This is probably a pretty common question that comes because I feel as humans and certain things will cause us to happen to store fat around our bellies. And I know that a lot of people come in when they say they want to lose weight, what they're really saying is I want to lose belly fat. Do you have any top tips for losing belly fat?
So whoever sent this question, I hate to disappoint you, but when you lose fat, your body decides where it wants to pull it. And a lot of that is unfortunately genetics. So people, you know, that apple pear or apple shape, pear shape, that's genetics mostly. So when you lose weight, your body's going to pull fat from where it wants to. It's not going to say, you know what, you want to lose weight from the stomach, I'm going to pull it from the stomach. If that was how it was, that would be amazing. But that's not how it works, unfortunately. So it's going to just come from wherever it wants to.
And I guess let's just go over this one more time. And if you are looking to lose fat or lose weight, what do you have to do?
Calorie deficit.
Calorie deficit. Let's sing that even louder. All right, Alexa, I won't keep you too much longer, but if people are listening to this and they go, holy smokes, Alexa knows what she's talking about, I want to work with her. One, are you taking on clients? And two, how do they get in contact with you? How do they follow you on social? How do they connect?
Yeah, I am taking on clients. So I recently left my job at the UFC Performance Institute. I was there for about 2 years. So I decided to take on clients full time. However, I'm filling up quickly. People seem to just want to get their goals in before the end of 2020, this crazy year that we have. But I am taking on a couple more spots. So if you are interested, you can find me at Instagram. I'm also on TikTok. I've really just up in my TikTok game lately. Loving it,
actually.
Yeah, thanks. But it's at alexaeisenberg.rd. You can email me alexaeisenbergnutrition@gmail.com. My first and last name, nutrition@gmail.com. And then also I have a private Facebook group. It's free. I provide content in there. I do live videos, post recipes, answer any questions you have. And that is just Ask Alexa Health and Nutrition Group on Facebook.
Excellent. Well, everyone, you just heard it there. You've just got someone who worked at probably the premier performance facility in the world, who's now gone private and is taking on clients. And that's your chance where you can get in. If you have any of these questions or if you've gone through that, and so many of us have, like, how do I lose this weight? Is protein good for me before and after workout? Do I need to eat more plants? All of those questions. Just ask Alexa. So go through, follow her, reach out, connect, and do yourself the favor. Alexa, thanks so much for coming on and taking the time.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's great. Appreciate it.
And there it is, another episode of the Fight Science Podcast. There you go. You've now heard it for yourself. Bread and dairy are fine to eat unless you have a specific medical condition. Your body is perfectly capable of doing a detox without needing a tea, and carbs are not the enemy. If you want to continue getting this great information, then be sure to follow Alexa on her socials. This podcast will be available through the podcast app, iTunes, Spotify, YouTube, and you'll also be able to download it from my website, www.thefightdietitian.com/podcast. If you enjoy listening to the podcast, then be sure to head to the podcast app to give us a rating and leave us a review. Thanks for listening in, and I'll see you guys for the next episode of the Fight Science Podcast.